Stay a while. Stay forever.
Hello and welcome to News Trash, the series here on The Geek Show, which we look at all things that are happening in the world of video games, whether it's big and everybody else is rabbiting on about it, or it's small and not enough people are talking about it. Either or, we cover the whole cross-section of video games chatter. My name is Rob, and I really need to be consistent with my intro each week, and as ever, I am joined by the co-host and the guy who collects, and reads the news, Prob.
Hello! And I will say this, right? Consistency is for fools, right? It's better to be inconsistent and interesting than it is to be consistent and dull.
Yeah, when it's inconsistent, though, I usually have a go at all the YouTube channels, read news stories, and pass it off as their own content.
And that's what makes you interesting.
It bugs me so much. It's that the reason why you bring this up, listeners, is that how low the bar is for YouTube?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Not like due diligence or looking for interesting stories.
This is how bad YouTube is. Reaction channels make it big on YouTube. And thus far, I have only found one that I found to be actually any kind of decent, and that's because it's a guy who's never been introduced to any kind of metal or prog rock or any kind of classical rock music or anything like that, and he's exploring that music for the first time and recording his reactions to it and exploring classical music as well. And that I find interesting. Last week we were talking about, on the last episode, sorry, we were talking about Sony closing the PS3, PSP and PS Vita stores. Turns out that whole thing is a little bit more serious and I hesitate to call it evil, but it is, than we thought.
Let's not call it evil. Let's call it, it reveals a lot about Sony.
Yeah, it's the kind of middle-class evil that you only get in major corporations. Sony apparently didn't bother telling indie devs, especially the smaller indie devs, that they were closing the PS Vita store. Now, the PS Vita was still having games made for it, especially from indie devs. It's a big platform for indie development. And pretty much all of the small indie devs didn't get told. The big developers and the big publishers got told. The smaller ones didn't. Sony even sold a dev kit to one of the small-scale indie devs just last month. A month before they announced the store closures. Now, they would have known.
They knew that they were going to close it that far out.
Yeah.
They're absolutely known. They don't make big, wide-scale decisions to close three shop fronts on a whim in a couple of weeks. That's a long decision with many meetings and many sort of financial assessments. They knew they were going to close it, and they still sold this developer a kit.
Yeah.
And those kits aren't cheap.
And the thing is, you've got so many developers now who are basically cancelling the development of titles to be released on the Vita, while others are rushing to finish the development of these titles for the Vita so they can at least get some kind of income from it.
Yeah. It's like 2 months, just shy of 2 months as we speak now, before the start closing.
Yeah. And apparently Sony have mentioned that they've got something in the pipeline to go against Game Pass. But
yeah, they're not ready to announce it yet. But honestly, I don't think they can compete with Game Pass because they've came out. Jim Ryan, who I believe might be almost Don Matrick levels of incompetent sort of platform
that bad
guy.
That bad.
He just inherited a better ship.
Yeah, you know? No, it isn't.
So it takes an awful lot more effort to sink it, which I think he's doing a great job of. And this is coming from a PlayStation fan, a long-time PlayStation fan, but honestly, PlayStation can't compete with Game Pass because, one, the financial clout that Microsoft have, and two, Sony have outright said that they're not going to put any sort of big budget AAA games on it. So the point of competing with a service is providing the same sort of service, but different. So if you refuse to acknowledge one of the core aspects of Game Pass, you're not really competing with it. You're not really creating a competing service. You're just basically pandering because you think you're doing what the audience wants.
Yeah.
Rather than doing what's right.
Yep.
If you get me. Yeah. But honestly, this past year, well, first off, I think that they released the PlayStation 5 too soon.
Yeah.
And the decisions that they are making, it's, you know, there's a theory in politics, you know, where you do a bad thing, but you announce a good thing, so everybody will forget the bad thing. Yep. And I get the feeling that Sony at the higher levels are doing that. So with this bad news happening now, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest if we have some big, cool, exciting, awesome news coming very soon, just to make people forget about these stars
closing. Hang on, isn't this the Omar Jalili method? You know, tell a racially insensitive joke, then belly dance.
Yeah, it's the Mr. Burns method as well. But yeah, that's basically it. Racially insensitive joke, and they're just winding up for the belly dance right now, Sony.
Exactly.
Thank you for lightening that, by the way, because it got a bit heavy. But yeah, Omar Jalili is just warming up on the side of the stage.
With his belly.
Just about just to rip his shirt off. But what I said is
yeah,
true.
Yeah, it is.
What I said is
true. It is
true.
It is true. Moving on to interesting story. Now, there's a service called App Annie, which does like analytics for app for a variety of apps on both Android and iOS. Now, according to statistics revealed by App Annie in this last week, in the first quarter of 2021, consumers have spent a total of $32 billion on in-app purchases on both iOS and Google Play globally. And to give you a bit more context on that, $21 billion on iOS and $11 billion on Google Play. And of that, 32% were, basically gaming specifically, in-app purchases rose by 32% to $22 billion. So $32 billion spent on in-app purchases, and $22 billion of that is just on gaming.
I'd be curious to see how that compares to games, like traditional PC or console games in the same sort of window, because that has to be in a competitive level right now.
Yeah. I mean, on iOS, users on iOS spent $13 billion on games, and that constituted a 30% increase year over year. Google Play was $9 billion on games, which is a 35% increase year on year, which is a massive increase in mobile gaming.
I'm curious to see how it breaks down around the globe, where's like the popular hotspots.
Yeah.
Because this is a thing which is, it gets to the core of why a lot of people hate mobile gaming.
Yeah.
Because they'll say, oh, it's not on real games, it's on Connect 3 games. It's like Merge Dragons or whatever,
Gardenscapes or Homescapes or something like that. Yeah,
it's not real games, and yeah, that is. I imagine those games do get like a lion's share of the mobile pie, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, but I mean, then you've got other games like there's the racing games like Asphalt and that, where you can do in-app purchases and buy cards to unlock cars and stuff like that, and people spend money on that because they want the supercars and the hypercars and all that. There's all sorts of other games that are very similar. I mean, there's football games where you can basically do what FIFA does with Ultimate Team, very similar.
Yeah.
So those are things that happen. I think the Match 3 games are kind of the lowest tier, easiest in-app purchase type games. But then you move to
The Hoover up the most.
Yeah, the Hoover up the most.
Like Footfall, so to speak.
But I mean, you keep scaling up until you get to games like Genshin Impact and stuff like that, where you literally, you know, you can buy characters and stuff, and in-app purchases are, you know, it's a game itself.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this is sort of the beginning of the video game industry kind of being outmuscled by the mobile gaming industry. It's the beginning. It will happen. It is going to happen eventually.
Well, I mean, the thing is, most people look at this, look at these in-app purchases and stuff like that as...
Just on that, before you say that, this is in-app purchases as well. You've got to pay for some games as well. That's not including that.
Yeah, see...
That's a separate figure.
Here's the thing, right? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about this quite a lot over the last couple of days, and I thought, hang on, this is exactly the same as gaming on a console. It's just going by a different name. Right. So if you take something like Genshin Impact, which is an actual game in itself, And yes, it's got in-app purchases, okay? But the game is essentially free. Now, you transfer Genshin Impact to a console, it no longer becomes in-app purchases. What you have instead is called DLC. That's
microtransactions.
Microtransactions, DLC, whatever you want to call it. But they're exactly the same thing. And I think just the difference in terminology is kind of confusing people to think one thing is one thing and another thing is another thing. And it's not. They're both exactly the same.
It's this territorial stuff. Yeah. You know, it's like once upon a time people didn't call... The Wii's not a real console.
Yeah.
You're not a real gamer if you play on a Wii.
Of course you are.
And it's the same thing which is happening here with mobile gaming. I do think it's on a path to mobile games being legitimate games rather than little time wasters.
Yeah.
But that won't happen overnight. Yeah. I mean, honestly, with normal gaming, that wasn't an instant thing.
Yeah.
Like the original games were kind of, you know, kind of very pick up and play by design, early gaming. And that's the sort of place which mobile gaming is at right now. It's very dip in, pick up and play.
Yeah. Speaking of in-app purchases, right? Loot boxes. Hmm. Now, this is kind of a serious story, so hold on to your pants. New research from the universities of Plymouth and Wolverhampton, or Wolverhampton, however you want to say it.
So, like, people's trousers fall down when the serious news.
Yeah.
That explains Boris Johnson, admittedly.
Anyway, yeah, new research from the universities of Plymouth and Wolverhampton have robustly verified a link between loot boxes and problem gambling, and have also found that large numbers of children are opening loot boxes.
This is odd news, though.
No, this is...
Everybody knew this.
This is news that everyone knew, but now it's, like, robustly verified with actual peer-reviewed university research. So, companies like EA...
Could have just asked a random guy in the street, and they'd have saved millions of pounds in that study.
Yeah, but the thing is, companies like EA and others have always been able to argue the case that loot boxes weren't a form of gambling because there was no...
No, Rob. No. There are surprise mechanics.
Yes, but this is the thing. They've been able to use that argument because there's been no actual scientific research into this. Now there is. And now there is a direct link confirmed from peer-reviewed university research. Well, actually, is it peer-reviewed? I don't know. I will double-check on that. But it is actual university research, and if it gets peer-reviewed and they actually confirm the data, then EA have no legal standing to call it surprise mechanics. They have to call it gambling.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the surprise mechanics thing really worried me. I mean, where did I go to, like, they go to mechanics where all the people who work there are hiding in cupboards and you just go around and, hello, is anybody there? Can you help me? My car's a bit tricky. It keeps them ticking over.
Yeah.
And then somebody goes, you never expected me, are you? Did you?
Yeah.
I'm a surprise mechanic. Because honestly, that's very condescending what that spokeswoman for EA did at that review into the Ultimate Team. And honestly, it's one of these things, isn't it? When a new generation comes, you hope that it sort of looks at itself and addresses itself.
Yeah.
And that wasn't going to happen.
No.
It took something like, you know, governments to actually do what they're paid to do and represent people to do.
Well, I mean...
And actually say, you know what? People are getting manipulated and conned out of money here. This is gambling and it's not addressed as gambling and it's not legalized or...
Do you know who actually...
Any of the laws surrounding gambling in these mechanics.
Do you know who actually commissioned the research? Was the charity Gamble Aware.
Yeah, so they should.
Yeah, and they found that of the 93% of children who play video games, up to 40% opened loot boxes. It also found 12 out of 13 studies on loot boxes established unambiguous connections to problem gambling behavior, with young men the most likely to use loot boxes and young age and lower education correlating with increased use. So loot boxes are clearly aimed at a younger audience, and lead directly to problem gambling.
You really don't want to dig into the economics of the companies who go for this.
Yeah,
you called the PlayStation shutting.
Yeah,
the store and not telling indie developers as a mild level evil, whereas the mechanics of loot boxes and targeting problem gamblers, that is high ultimate intentional evil.
Yeah.
I mean, the terms they've got for, like, people who spend a lot of money, like, calling them sharks. No, whales.
Whales,
sorry.
Yeah.
They're targeting whales. And a white whale is somebody, I think, with both a lot of money to spend and an addiction. So they target these people intentionally. Yeah.
And the thing is...
And the fact that they're getting called out on it is good. The
thing is, this research actually does cover the whales aspect of things as well.
I might have got my terminology a bit off, because it's been a while since I've looked into it. But yeah, they do have terms for specific types of people which they can fleece.
Yeah, they do call them whales. The ones who... And the thing is, the research does focus on the aspect of them targeting whales as well. There's a lot in this research, and I'm actually curious about reading into it, because it is something that interests me. So I'll have a read into that. Anyway, leaving one scummy company to one side, and should I call them this? Maybe not. We'll see. Activision.
Yeah, you can okay. I mean, the fact that Bobby Kotick, one of their chief executives, is complaining to the internet to stop putting him in pictures of horns because he lays off like countless people and gets £20 million in like bonuses annually.
Can I just point out?
Yeah, that I think that they're not a morally upright company.
No. It's just let me just highlight just how much I consider Activision to be a Marvel villain. They recently appointed a company veteran to the position of chief financial officer. Do you know what that guy's name is?
What?
Armin Zerza, which is remarkable.
Very close.
It's very close, isn't it?
You know who Activision make me think of within the Marvel continuity? Roxxon Industries.
Yes.
So at the top, there's a guy who's actually... Is it a... What does Roxxon turn
into? He's a Minotaur, isn't he?
I should say that because it might be a spoiler for people who are going
It's really well known. He's a Minotaur or something like that. He's some kind of...
So Bobby Kotick is secretly a Minotaur.
Is that why they keep drawing horns on him?
Yeah, because he keeps on paying attention.
Video Games Chronicle editor-in-chief Andy Robinson has come forward and said that both his and his outlet's Twitter accounts were temporarily locked as a result of a DMCA claim from Activision because... They reported on news of a leak of a new Call of Duty map, you know, Call of Duty Warzone map. Now, they were reporting on something that had already come out kind of in the public domain, but Activision still leveled a DMCA at them. And it's not the first time Activision have done this. They did it last year as well. So I have to wonder, is this a legal thing that they can do? Are they legally allowed to do this to basically issue a DMCA on somebody who is only reporting on something that's already in the public domain? Because that doesn't seem legal to me.
Yeah, but let's be honest, there's lots of things that don't seem legal about the business practices of Activision, like one of the headquarters is in a small unused room in Amsterdam.
Yeah, that's not legal.
Yeah, for tax purposes.
It is legal, so, but it's not.
And then they get a rebate from the American government. Like, they're just very, very, very dubious as a company.
How did a video...
But hey, they do Call of Duty. People love Call of Duty, so hey-ho, doesn't matter.
How did a video games developer get so much power?
Like I said, Rob, Roxxon Industries. He's secretly a Minotaur.
Anyway, speaking of...
It explains too much, doesn't it?
It does. Right, speaking of power, I'm going to talk about augmented reality for a little bit here, right? Now, augmented reality is... VR seems to have plateaued a little bit, I think, until the new PSVR and various other advances are made. I think VR is kind of at a plateau, and everyone's...
Well, VR is at a plateau because the more people do it, the more that everything rises as a quality. Yeah. So, yeah.
The thing is, there seems to be this big kind of push forward in terms of augmented reality. So you have Niantic teasing their new Pokemon Go augmented reality. So their new augmented reality glasses, which may or may not be linked to Pokemon Go. We don't know. You have rumors of Apple doing their own augmented reality glasses. You have Snapchat doing spectacles, which are some kind of smart glasses. With augmented
reality.
That's
a very puntastic term, name that, isn't it? Calling them spectacles.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, you have all sorts of things like that happening within this kind of consumer augmented reality space. And obviously Google have already tried their hands at the glasses thing with Google Glass.
I think there's a website called something like Killed by Google or something.
Yeah.
Which has like a long list of all the things, all the projects that Google have started and just dropped.
Yeah.
So it's in good company.
Yeah, it's in good company. But this is the thing, right? Of all of them, it seems like Microsoft's HoloLens is at the forefront of all of this augmented reality stuff. But that's not aimed at consumers, right? That's aimed...
Is this the thing where they won like a $21 billion contract to develop AR for... I can't remember who it was.
Yep, the US military.
Oh, wow, that's big.
Microsoft have partnered with the US Army, and they won the $479 million contract to build augmented reality headsets for the military back in 2018. Now it's worth up to $22
billion. Wow.
That's a...
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft has said they're not interested in VR, so it's AR. Honestly, the only problem with AR has always been that, let's say it's on your phone, you're looking through a screen on your phone, and it's not really augmented reality, yeah. You're just looking on a screen. I think augmented reality has to basically compete on a level similar to virtual reality, as in you need something to go over your eyes.
Yeah, but not just... Because
that's how you perceive reality through your eyes. You don't perceive reality through something on the end of your hat, like you're holding your hand at arm's length.
Yeah.
So
augmented reality, right. My vision of augmented reality is kind of halfway between... what Ready Player One did was showing as its version of VR, and a little bit of what AR was in Minority Report. So basically, it'll be someone with a pair of glasses on that are basically showing them information, but they have like haptic gloves on that they can use as a kind of quasi touchscreen, so they can manipulate what's on the screen in front of them.
Yeah, because let's be honest, like consumer grade AR is horse crap.
Yeah. At the moment, and
that's why I've never been invested in it, you know. But if it has that sort of like device that you wear on your face and your hands that you interact with it with,
yeah,
I think honestly that is the future, which a lot of people talk about with sort of certain technologies as well as video games.
Yeah, and HoloLens, well, HoloLens is an amazing system in its own right. You know, the more I read into the technology behind HoloLens, the more I'm actually surprised at just how advanced it's become since it was announced at, was it CES or was it E3? I can't remember, all those years ago.
It wouldn't have been E3.
I think it was CES it was announced at, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the general trade show, electronics trade show.
HoloLens is just this amazing piece of kit. And, yeah, I can understand why they don't want to apply it to games, because it's one of those systems where you look at it and you go, I don't know how I could make a game for this, unless it...
Well, then you like that generally, though, aren't you?
Well, I mean...
I don't know how anybody makes a game out of anything.
Unless it's something like a real-time strategy, it'd be really difficult to make a game for HoloLens.
Who says it has to be in front of a TV, though? That's the thing.
That's the point. there's a group within Microsoft that are demanding the military contract be cancelled, and the group are arguing that the team who developed the initial version of HoloLens believed it would be used to help architects, engineers, and surgeons and other professionals in non-harmful ways, as well as helping to push the boundaries of gaming. We did not sign up to develop weapons, and we demand a say in how our work is used, which is fair enough, right?
Yeah, it is. Can we talk about toys now?
Yes, we're going to talk about toys.
Because I don't like talking. This is a bit
sick. We're going to talk about toys, don't worry. Anyway, on to our final story. Tencent, right? They have helped bust the world's biggest cheating operation.
That sounds big.
Yeah. Apparently, Chinese police have seized $46 million worth of assets, including luxury cars.
Hang on, what's this got to do with games? I'm fucking lost a bit here.
Game cheating. Video game cheating.
And what?
According to the BBC, the organisation was focused on various games, including Overwatch and Call of Duty Mobile, charging a subscription fee to its users worldwide for access to cheats. Prices range from $10 a day to $200 a month.
Oh, wow, that made a... Yeah, not much money involved in that one.
Yeah, when I said cheating, I meant, like, cheating.
I mean, I preferred the days of the old, like, Konami code and, you know...
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
It's believed that the gang made $76 million in revenue and the police seized $46 million worth of assets, including luxury cars, in a busting operation nicknamed, and this is the best name for a police bust, Chicken Drumstick.
Kind of weird, but sure, go with that.
The authorities destroyed 17 cheats and arrested 10 people across several locations, including one of the leaders of the gang.
Yeah, that's kind of, you just picture that, don't you, from either in a hardened prison full of, like, gang leaders and drug dealers and human traffickers, and they're in the courtyard, you know, doing exercises, you know, in the gangs, like, flexing the muscle. That new kid, what's he in for? Selling cheats at video games.
Oh, no, but if they compare income, it'll be like, I made $3 million, you know, transporting people across the borders. I made $10 million selling drugs to drugs in various places. I made $76 million selling cheats. Like, we're in the wrong business.
And then they beat him up.
Yeah, and then they beat him up for being a smart ass.
Yeah, but it's just such, it's really weird, isn't it? It sort of like plays into a lot of the things that, I don't want to sound like old man shouting at the sky, but video games have really changed.
Yeah.
It's like, it's kind of, this is similar to the way in which the money that people make from playing video games. It's, once upon a time, video games are just sort of like this little nerdy thing on the side, but it's stories like this, it's stories like the money, the figures that are made through e-gaming, esports champions, that shows you just how much the industry has evolved from like bedroom coders on like ZX Spectrums and Commodores and Amigas to $76 million.
Dollars.
International, yeah. Like dollars, but still. A cheat ring, a global cheat ring. It's not even the same industry anymore, is it really? It's just so.
I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball now, right? A little bit of a curveball. Now, you remember I said Tencent helped to bust the world's biggest cheating operation, yeah?
Yes, the world's biggest games, independent games company, the world's biggest independent games company, Tencent.
Now, through posts, right, this was mentioned on the Chinese Weibo. The team behind the company's Guardian plan, which aims at preventing cybercrime, was thanked during the press conference reporting the operation, but it's as yet still unclear what exactly Tencent's role was.
That's mysterious, isn't it?
I'm like, that's not mysterious and also a little bit unnerving at the same time. What exactly did Tencent do for them to be, I mean, okay, the Guardian plan is there to prevent cybercrime. Fine. Okay. What else did they do? I mean, do they have like their own like private army or something like that that they send in?
Well, that's what a lot of like sci-fi does, doesn't it? How all the countries aren't relevant anymore. The world is governed by organizations.
Yeah, I mean,
it's 10 to get in there. It's, they're getting in there early.
It's Deus Ex Human Revolution, isn't it?
It's like all the cyberpunk fiction in the world is coming true now.
So it's not going to be called China in the future. It's going to be called Tencent Huawei.
And this is a smaller story, but it's just something that kind of... But yeah, the cyberpunk thing. Apparently, cyberpunk developer CD Projekt Red screwed it up so much. They're going to like basically readdress entirely what they're doing. Make a second studio and start making Witcher games as well, because I think they just upset too many people.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, SpaghettiO, we kind of screwed this up.
Yeah, I mean, do you think we're ever going to see a war between like Activision and Tencent? Is it going to be like thumbs across the Pacific or something like that?
Yeah, like Activision Blizzard will buy EA, so Activision Blizzard EA will declare war on the Tencent nation.
Yeah, but Tencent will probably buy like a bunch of the Japanese developers, won't they?
Yeah, they're secretly and quietly buying everybody.
Yeah.
People don't realise how powerful they're becoming in the background.
I mean, I can see companies like, Nexon already has a stake. I wouldn't say it's got a stake, but it's got influence in companies like Konami and Capcom and that, for them to throw funding at these companies. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes, because Nexon's a massive company as well.
Yeah, it's getting, I mean, I said this last week, how everybody's clanning up. Basically, what's happening is video games is getting into the studio age of Hollywood.
Yeah.
Where everything is under the studio system.
Oh, wow. I just thought, if it's getting to that point, do you think we're going to see what happened during the studio age of Hollywood happen in the video games industry?
Yeah, lots of, like, seedy-ass crap happened. So, yeah, it's basically already there. There's already seedy, horrible stuff happening in the video game industry. So, yeah, we're already there, right? The thought of getting before the studio system really sinks its teeth in.
Oh, wow.
All we need now in the video game industry is some murders in the background. Yeah. And it's pretty much like for like with how it was in that era of Hollywood.
Yeah, if you're curious, look into the stuff that happened during that era of Hollywood. It's surprising how people in Hollywood don't mention it and they don't talk about it these days.
No. There's a podcast about it. I'll put the link in the description, because I literally cannot remember what it's called. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of stories.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories. And if we're entering that era of video games, then I'm actually curious what's going to happen next. I'll sit there with the popcorn ready and waiting.
Yeah. And on that, I think that's all we can really talk about this week. So if you're listening to the podcast version of this, stay tuned in the upcoming half, because I believe it's either Games Marmalade, we took a month off of that, Impossible Mission. But either way, if you like it, give us a rating on your podcast provider of choice, because that's the sort of thing which allows us to be seen in a marketplace which is suffocated by thousands of terrible podcasts from San Francisco. Little things like us need help to stand on our own two feet. Also, as our Patreon, patreon.com/thegeekshow. Lots of plans there, lots of stuff happening. But yeah, that's it. Like, subscribe, comment, you filthy animals. A Home Alone reference just slipped out of my mouth for whatever reason, I don't know.
Hello, I'm J. Michael Tatum and you are listening to The Geek Show.
Hello and welcome to Impossible Mission. I've got all of the silly intros out of my system. This is the Geek Show's discussion program about things that are happening around the world of video games in a bit more of a focused, concentrated way than our sister show, News Trash. I am Rob, and as ever, I am joined. I was going to describe you as my better half there, but that'd be an accident.
I am your better half.
The producer. Producer Prob also goes.
Hello. Yes.
Yeah. Don't know where that came from.
We've been friends and colleagues for too long.
We do get described as an old married couple, but that's what happens when you're friends with someone for a very long time. It just happens.
Yes.
Maybe you want it or not. It just happens, people. I tried to segue out of that. Yeah. You know what else just happens? PlayStation doing silly stuff, because, you know, this episode we've suggested and talked around it, you know, many YouTubers have done videos about it, how they basically just rant or complain or moan about what Sony have done recently, in the sense of, if you've been living under a rock, which you might have, and they've essentially decided to close the PlayStation 3, PSP and PS Vita stores in the upcoming months, effectively making those games impossible for anybody to reach. Because, you know, those games become rare, and when games become rare, they become incredibly expensive. So if you want to play a childhood favourite, better get ready to fork in excess of over £100. And that is what is happening. So today, we're going to be talking about a subject related to that, but not in the way that everybody else has. Today, we're going to be talking about games ownership, part two.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. Back in July last year, we did a video on the future of games ownership. And in that video, we focused mainly on streaming. We focused mainly on streaming services like Google Stadia and stuff like that, and what that meant for the future of games ownership. This time, though, we need to go back to that topic of games ownership, because it is a very relevant topic now that Sony are doing these store closures. I know everyone else is focused on games preservation. Yes, that is a big thing. But I think the most important aspect of this entire scenario that we've found ourselves in is who actually owns the games that you purchase digitally.
Yeah.
And that is an important question I think needs to be answered. And it's a question that, to be honest, I think that greater minds than ours need to address, because digital rights ownership is a massive thing. here's the thing, right? Everyone is so focused on games preservation, and we will touch on games preservation at certain points throughout this discussion. It's inevitable that it's going to be a thing. But I think the legal ramifications of Sony's decision... See, Sony have decided this a long time ago. They didn't just suddenly wake up, you know, yesterday and decide, you know, hey, we're going to close these stores because that's going to be a great idea. Yeah, they obviously knew about this a while ago. And one of the things that we reported in News Trash and that other agencies have also reported is that indie devs, small indie devs, weren't actually informed of the closure of these stores, especially the Vita store.
Just to clarify that, we're not talking about sort of Devolver Digital. We're talking about sort of very, very small operations, teams of like under five, under 10.
Yeah, we're talking small operations who are basically, maybe they're making the first game, maybe they're making the second or third game, but they're coding specifically for the Vita because there is still a market for games on the Vita.
Yeah.
Right? And so they weren't told. In fact, one of the stories that came out was that one of the smaller devs had actually bought a PS Vita development kit off Sony just the month before Sony made this announcement.
I mean, just on that, the amount of bureaucracy that go through to make a decision like this, there's levels Department A talks to Department B, who makes decision C, and then they run it through finance, and if finance gives it the okay, they run it through marketing, they think of ways they can spin it, ways they can announce it, and then somebody leaks it.
Yeah.
So the decision to, well, reveal this sort of information is taken out of their hands, but at the same time, this all happened. They're through indie developers under the bus entirely. And before we get on to games preservation and games ownership, that shows a staggering disregard for the smaller companies from Sony.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, because of this news, because of just the way Sony have handled it, lots of PS Vita developers have cancelled their projects for the Vita.
Yeah.
Now, I know Sony wasn't that keen on the Vita. I mean, it only took a couple of years for Sony to completely cool off on the Vita. They didn't really have any hope for it. But that, again, is down to their own lack of vision.
Yeah, but you say they didn't have, like, they used a proprietary, saving system, like memory card or memory.
Yeah,
or
the memory card.
But at the same time, they started off with a proprietary memory system. That doesn't mean they have to keep it. They could have easily just made their own. They didn't want to.
And when everyone is using SD cards, why would you make a modified version of an SD card and then sell it for £50 when people can buy an SD card that has greater capacity for about 30?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But
that was one of the key problems with the Vita early on. And because of that, what you ended up getting on the Vita were all of these Commoner Garden JRPGs. There were a lot of Japanese games on the Vita. Japanese developers really liked the Vita because, you know, as a handheld device, it was one of the most powerful. And a lot of indie devs like it because of the power it affords them. They can basically make games that are a bit more advanced, that are a bit more detailed than they can for other platforms quite easily. And so all of these devs feel like they've been kicked in the teeth because of that. But the big concern that I've got, and that I think is a growing concern now among, it's a big concern for devs as well, and I think it's going to be a growing concern for consumers, is if you've uploaded a game to the PlayStation Store, right, you've signed a contract that you will only sell, that game is only available through that storefront, yeah?
Yeah.
So you can't sell that game on your own website?
Not on the PlayStation, no.
Yeah, which means, is that contract still binding even if the storefront doesn't exist? Which means you can't sell the game on your own website or on another platform for the Vita.
Well, for the developers, no, they've basically been bound into a corner. They only could sell this thing on the PlayStation 3, PSP, Vita, PS4, PS5 store.
Yeah. So, if you're basically falling into a trap, a contract like that, then what are your legal options? You have no choice but to basically go to court and fight it, or to basically walk away from it. But if you walk away from it, then you're basically soured on developing for Sony, ever again.
Oh, yeah. I think that's one of the hidden byproducts of this. They're going to lose a lot of indie support. And honestly, PlayStation weren't the most majorly supported platform for indie games, because even before this, they didn't treat them well.
Yeah, I know.
As PlayStation being a primary outlet for indie games, that's kind of dead now.
Yeah. I don't understand what the logic is behind this decision, as it seems like a pointless decision, especially when you look at the fact that they're digital storefronts.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a physical shop. They don't have a chain of stores all over the world selling discs and cartridges. They're online digital storefronts. They don't take up a lot of server space.
It's cloud servers, right? You know.
Exactly. So what could have possibly been behind this decision? I don't know. Maybe Sony are working on something to replace those storefronts. Maybe they're going to release a retro storefront or something like that. I honestly couldn't say. But the question still remains, who owns that game that the developer has actually put up there?
Let's just look at it from like different perspectives. A digital movie.
Yeah.
You buy it, whatever the platform is, whether it's through iTunes or Google Play or some third-party outlet. You basically get the file, and you can download the file onto your PC, and you're not tied to the server you used it from. You can watch it wherever you want, whenever you want, whatever device you want. It's yours. It's mobile. It's truly a digital bit of ownership. Music. I'm an avid supporter of Bandcamp. And on Bandcamp, I have an app which I can interact with that music, and I can listen to that music wherever, as long as there's an internet connection. Or I can download it and keep it in my collection, separate from the platform, separate from the device I bought it from, and it's mine to interact with however I want. But PlayStation don't have that separation. It's like you buy it from their store, and that store is where it'll stay.
But the thing is, Sony will argue, right? And this is something that they will argue, and this is for consumers and developers, because it's consumers as well. Sony haven't actually said. Sony have come up with some instructions on what you can do, but they haven't actually really been clear. Those notifications that they've given are vague at best, right? Yeah. Basically what they've said is you'll still have access to these things to download to your consoles, to your handhelds, whatever. Yeah. But what they haven't said is if you can't download it there and then, if you don't have the capacity on your consoles or on your handhelds to download all of these, all, you know, just the sheer number of games that people sometimes have in their libraries, if you don't have the capability or the capacity to download all those files, what happens to them when the storefront closes? Do you still have access to them? Can you still download them?
Because that's the thing. You can't download them, because where do you download them from?
Exactly. And this is the key difference between what's happening with Sony and what's happening in other places. Sony will turn around and say, we've let people download them. We give them 3 months' notice to download them. But the issue that I have on the consumer and the developer front, right, the issue I have is that digital rights ownership should be in perpetuity. Right? It should be forever. Once you've bought it, that is yours for good. And that platform that you were able to access it on should be open for you to access your property.
Here's the thing, right? You're not buying it, are you? Let's get right down to it. On the PlayStation Digital Store, you're not buying squat.
No.
What you're basically doing is extended rental.
Yeah.
It's not ownership. You don't own a thing. Nintendo are exactly the same. Digitally, anyway. You don't own squat, because if you can't separate it from the device it's been bought off, it's just a rental.
Yep.
You're just renting the license. And that's not digital ownership. And people don't rent these things. They don't ask to rent these things.
Yeah.
They don't promote it like digital rental. You don't have rent lists on the storefront, do you? It says buy list. And if you buy it, you own it. And, you know, you didn't go to, like, I don't know, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the shop now. That you rented movies from and DVDs and stuff.
Blockbuster.
Blockbuster. There we go. It was on the tip of my tongue. You didn't go and rent in the Blockbuster. It didn't say on, like, the DVDs, buy this, did it? It said rent this.
Sometimes it did.
Oh, yeah, but when it was, like, an X title, when you could literally buy it, when they'd finished with it and they wanted a shot of it, you could rent those, you could buy those old titles. But there's no distinction here. You buy it, even though you are not buying it at the end of the day.
See, that and there's a key thing, right? If I go onto Amazon Prime, for example, right?
Yeah.
I want to watch a film. I can rent that film and have a one-time watch license for it, right? Mm-hmm. I can watch it all the way through, and then I'm done, right? And then basically I'd have to pay to rent it again. Or I can pay more and basically buy the film, and then it's permanently on my Prime. I can download it, I can do whatever, yeah?
Yes.
But that will always, that should always then be, should, I use the operative word, should always then be accessible to me as my purchase on Amazon Prime, on Prime Video.
It's true with Prime Video, because I bought some CDs through Prime and Amazon, let's say about 2007 when I started using Amazon. And I can still download those things.
Yeah.
So Amazon mean it when they say it.
Yeah. And that should be what happens with digital storefronts, right? Once you've purchased it, the digital rights ownership should be yours. It should be your property online, and so you can basically download it. Okay, there are various contractual issues that come with any property like that. You've got IP issues and various things like that. So you can't pirate it, you can't modify it, things like that. But that's part of the digital rights ownership.
There is the big elephant in the room you just said there.
Yeah.
In doing this, basically PlayStation have given carte blanche to emulators and to pirates. And even before this, it's been kind of a given that people who emulate games and pirate them are doing a better job at preserving games for posterity and for history than the actual people, not the people who made them, but the people, the platform holders.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah.
No, it's not kind of. Let's remove the kind of. What's kind of sad is when you go to the corner shop and they're out of your favourite flavour of crisps. That's kind of sad. This is just tragic. Maybe not crisps. I'm not a big crisps eater. flavored water. It's all strawberry. I'm sick of strawberry. That's kind of sad. But this is really bad. This is genuinely awful.
And that I think is the key thing. You know, when we talk about ownership of games, when we talk about ownership of anything online, anything in the digital sphere, there are always going to be there's always going to be some legal argy-bargy that goes with it. But fundamentally, there is a belief that if you have purchased something online, that purchase is yours. That is the fundamental belief behind all digital purposes.
Going back to the other things, I've bought stuff from Bandcamp. I own it forever. I've bought stuff from Boomcat, which is a similar service, not quite as high profile. I own that forever now.
But here's the thing.
Movies, if same, Sony, but video games can't wrap their head around that.
But this is the key. This is one other aspect of this argument, okay? Because we basically touched on the rights of the developer, who, you know, how can they then sell their games for that platform if they don't have the storefront to sell their games for that platform? Yeah. Because they can still make money off these games. And if they've got, these games are made for these specific platforms.
Just for the sake of argument, I would love it if I could still access SSX, Dead Soul, SSX and Onimusha and Dead Space and stuff like this, if I had a place to do that. But because the platforms that they were made on don't exist anymore, tough chance. Not happening.
But on the PlayStation 3, they did have those PlayStation Classics.
They did, yeah. Not as many as I'd like, but they did have them, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, that was a growing library. That was actually a growing library of games for the PlayStation 3, and some of them now exist on the PlayStation 4, not as many, but they do exist. But those will all...
minimum,
Yeah, those will all be gone as well, right? But this is the thing. On the dev side, they have to they then have to ask the fundamental question, well, if we upload to a particular platform, you know, is that game still ours, or is it now theirs to do with as they will, and we basically are just left in the lurch? On the consumer side, you know, if we paid for this game, is that game then ours, as long as that platform is, alive and kicking?
This is a legal chicken and the egg, isn't it?
Until the company behind it decides to basically shut down that platform. But this is where the biggest legal argument, I think, comes into play. If Sony can't come up with a legal, an ethical and legal solution to all of this, right, it puts the entire, pretty much the entirety of digital rights ownership at risk.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize just how big a bomb Sony has dropped here.
Yeah.
And I even I am kind of just cringing in a little bit of fear at just the ripple effects that can become tidal waves because of this. This is the pebble that turns into a tidal wave. This has to be Sony's decision here is going to have much bigger long-term effects than I think anyone actually realizes from the legal standpoint, because all of those services that we've talked about, Bandcamp, Amazon Prime, Netflix, whatever, right? All of those services where you pay a subscription, maybe you can pay for something and then you own it, right? All of those services where you can buy a movie, buy a song, and then it's yours, right?
Yeah.
All of that digital rights ownership comes into question just because of what Sony has done. Because if Sony, a company like Sony, you know, can't follow the basic principle of digital rights ownership, then you can't rely on any other company to do it either. Do you see where the legal gray areas start appearing?
Yeah.
What used to be clear and defined becomes massively muddy.
Hmm. I said it on the news trash. Honestly, I think this is the level of decision where it's so bad that they have to sort of do something positive, like really positive, like drop like a huge game announcement to sort of make people not think about it anymore. But yes. I don't think that's enough.
No.
The rage that this has opened, honestly, we also talked about on this episode of News Trash how effectively they're going to have to make a Games Pass alternative.
Yeah.
I think that genuine heat and hatred and annoyance and frustration and developers have sold down the river, and this amount of ill will one simple decision has made. This makes Don Matrick look like a rank amateur, the amount that this has backfired.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of anger and just sheer rage that's been pouring out because of this. This is going to be a very obscure reference, but the Sony execs probably need to form a circle of Sesa Fasir. That is a very obscure Red Dwarf reference.
Oh, it's a Red Dwarf reference. Okay. Yeah. But effectively, I think this has forced their hand to create like a PlayStation archive service where you can access like all of their old titles, whether it's like a subscription service, which I would prefer it if it wasn't, or whether it was a service where you can download like an archive of old games. I think this backfire has force their hands, because if they don't do anything, they're basically making burying themselves here.
Yeah. I mean, let me put it this way. I was all for buying a PlayStation 5, right? I was all for buying a PlayStation 5, and now I really couldn't give a crap.
I mean, I only want one because I've got a lot of games tied up in that system.
Yeah.
And I want to play them. You know,
thing is, I'm perfectly happy just keeping my PlayStation 4 Pro and using that and not buying anything for the PlayStation 5, because at the end of the day, I can no longer trust Sony with any of the digital games I have.
Quite a few on the PlayStation 3 as well, ones that I loved and they're gone forever.
Exactly. And, you know, we have a lot of digital games. Most games are released digitally these days. Most people buy games digitally these days. And if you can't trust the storefront that you're purchasing from, then there is no point in you owning that console.
Yeah, I think even if it comes down to them changing the sort of the front face, so they don't actually say you own it anymore, so they don't actually say buy this for whatever.
Yeah.
I think that might have to be part of this conversation that Sony are going to have themselves.
Yeah. I mean, if they did come up with a service, a kind of a retro service where you could basically buy these things at a discounted rate, yeah?
Yeah, it's called something called PlayStation Archive, because its acronym is PSA.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of, I don't know why I said that. It just makes, it satisfies me.
It could be PlayStation's version of GOG.com, yeah?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, you know, GOG.com does like the old PC games and stuff like that, digs through archives of PC games, and you can find some really fantastic games on GOG.com for PC.
Yeah.
But
let's be honest, outside,
something like that.
Most games that aren't on cartridges, because that's like hardware, most games that were created and sold on disc existed digitally somewhere at some point in time.
Yeah.
And the fact that the platform is gone shouldn't mean that those games cease to exist, because that's kind of crapping on many, many hours' work, the love which was felt for these titles, and so many other things. It can't just be like this, because honestly, this is really, really bad for the future of video games if this goes unchecked.
Just to wind back a little bit, I just want to make it clear to everyone, right? This is a lot of what we've talked about here is based on current information, right? Sony have yet to announce what they are actually doing, you know, if they're going to be doing anything as an alternative. They have yet to clarify any of the points that they've made regarding the closure of the stores and regarding, you know, your access to games. This is our interpretation of what they've said, right?
And what they've done, but yeah.
And what they've done. And so from our perspective, we see this as a massive legal challenge for Sony. And I honestly could see a lot of people taking Sony to court over this on the dev side and on the consumer side. I honestly don't know why. I do, because finance, cash is involved. But you can always find a lawyer who wants to take a big corporation to court, you know. There's always a lawyer who wants to take a big corporation to court because it's a paycheck day for them, you know, especially if they win. And right now, if Sony, you know, with the information that we have right now, Sony made this decision ages ago, didn't tell the smaller indie devs. If the smaller indie devs grouped together and basically got themselves a decent lawyer and basically took Sony to court, I think they'd have a good chance at actually winning.
Honestly, this is kind of curious, isn't it? I mean, Nintendo do this thing all of the time, but they've never flacked as much heat as Sony have for this. Nintendo are happy that Sony are getting all of this bad will and heat.
I think because what Nintendo does is basically release Mario All-Stars Collection.
It's even before that,
6 months.
It's even before that. Where's the Wii U Star? Where's the Wii Star? Don't exist anymore. Yeah. Those games don't exist anymore. They're gone. Removed. Nada. Yeah. So it's not just, I mean, Microsoft are the only ones who are getting away with it, really.
Well, that's because Microsoft basically went, hey, you know, there's all sorts that you can get access to on our store.
Yeah,
you want Xbox games? Here's some Xbox games. You want Xbox One games? Here's some Xbox One games. You want 360 games? There weren't that many good ones, but here's the bunch of 360
it's
games.
Remarkable how prescient Nintendo and become it predicting what's going to happen. Because we, at the beginning of the PlayStation 4, Xbox One generation, we thought all of their decisions were, they're ridiculous. Who's going to watch TV on the bloody computer? Ridiculous. End of the generation. Everybody's doing it. Who's going to stream games and play digitally all the time? That's what they said at the beginning of the PlayStation 4 generation. Everybody's doing it. So,
did you mean Nintendo or Microsoft?
Microsoft. Microsoft are kind of leading the conversation. I might have worded it wrongly there. Sorry, but
You said Nintendo, and I was thinking, when did Nintendo start doing streaming service? Why wasn't I told?
My point is basically that Microsoft needed it again there. Microsoft are basically about at least 5 years ahead of the conversation.
Yeah. Yes, they are.
And it's amazing how they continue to do that. But I think this sort of thing reveals how old world and old business video games platform holders are.
Yeah.
And massive mistakes are what reveal those shortcomings and reveal those short-sightedness.
Well, not only that, it also reveals a certain amount of greed on the part of these platform holders. You look at this whole aspect of encouraging fake fear of missing out, this artificial fear of missing out,
fear of missing out. That's just what they do, isn't it? They make you do that. They have this FOMO. It's a marketing strategy.
Yeah, it is. But Nintendo, for example, their Mario All-Stars collection, which was Super Mario Sunshine, Super Mario All-Stars 60, and Super Mario 64, was it?
There was three of them. I don't remember.
There was three of them. And it only got released like 6 months ago. And then they got, you know, everyone got told, you got a week left to download it off off the Switch store.
There was a few Mario games that they did that with. That was that multiplayer Super Mario World one as well.
Yeah.
Which you did.
And so, you know, that is this, that's manufacturing this this fear of missing out.
Just on that case, those are physical games as well.
Yeah, those are physical games. But now, if you look at the copies of Mario All-Stars Collection on the Switch, prices really shot up.
Oh, I imagine.
The digital sales went up by 276%. We reported on that on News Trash already, just because Nintendo came up with this idea for it. And that I can understand from a business perspective that you're making more money, but I find the practice abhorrent. It's the main reason. This is actually one of the main reasons why I could only work in marketing and advertising for a short period of time. And then I left because I just did not like a lot of the practices that went in.
Yeah.
And this was during the 90s. Things are a lot more, psychological these days.
Evil.
Yeah.
It's called a cat a cat, Rob. It's evil. It's an evil cat called Satan.
But yeah, on the subject of Sony and digital rights ownership, I think that when it comes to games preservation, I think that is not the primary argument that people should be looking at. It's not the primary aspect of this that people should be looking at.
It's a big part of it, though. Big, big part.
I think it's a big part of it, but I don't think it's the major thing that we need to focus on with this.
Well, yeah, the big question is, do I own what I'm buying?
Yeah, and that is the fundamental question at the heart of all of this. Do I actually own what I'm paying for? If I pay for this game, do I own this game? Can I keep this game forever?
Yeah, I mean, Xbox get away with it with Game Pass because they don't make any illusions that the fact that you don't own this, you're just renting it, basically.
Yeah, and Netflix do the same. Netflix don't make any illusions to that. They basically say, you're paying a Netflix subscription. Yeah, you can download it, but you don't actually own this.
Yeah, but Sony, nothing of the sort. And I think they're going to be bit on the ass hard, or they're going to have to basically have the hand forced.
Sony, you've got a lot of questions to answer right now. A lot more than most of the audience watching this whole drama unfold. I think there are a lot more questions than even they realize.
Yeah,
and
if they want to keep the goodwill, they really have to act and swiftly.
Yeah, I think that the video games press needs to focus on the fundamental issues.
The video and game press is given entirely too much credit. They basically print PR statements, which companies give them. That's their function in the world right now.
Yeah, but I think that they need to focus on the fundamental issues that this whole thing raises, which is a fundamental issue to do with the digital rights ownership and who actually owns what.
Well, let's leave it there, because this has been a muchos heavios episode.
Yeah. Yes, it has. Yes, it has.
I
now it's time
Spanish.
For the belly dance.
I know.
No, belly
Spanish.
Dance, Rob. Yes. Belly dance. Belly dance.
Well, usually when it's a heavy bit in a heavy episode, there's a website I use called Pixabay. It's like a free archive. I just get an image of a sausage being chopped, and I don't think the sausage being chopped is going to really fit this.
No, Sony might take that as a threat and go after you.
Maybe. But yeah. Check us on Patreon. We've got all sorts of things over there. That's patreon.com/thegeekshow. Check us out on social media. There'll be a link. There's a little image in one of the corners where you can find the username to follow us there. Or if you're listening to this on the podcast provider, thanks. Thank you very much. Please give us a rating wherever you get your podcasts from, because honestly, it's the best thing you can do for a small outlet like us who keep on picking fights with big people.
So, if you like the video, give us a thumb, a sub, or a bell. Okay, that's all from Impossible Mission 4 this week. Join us next time for more video game chit-chat. Until then, thanks a lot for watching.